What is going on, sports fans? Thank you so much for tuning in to this edition of the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. A little bit of a somber note, because as soon as I sat down to hit record on this episode, some sad news in the NBA. Jerry West, NBA Hall of Famer, passes away at the age of 86. So we send our thoughts and prayers out to the entire West family. Obviously, Jerry West, I mean, a Hall of Famer, no doubt. Obviously, he's, you know, in the Hall of Fame, did a lot of great things for the game. Also, the silhouette you see on the logo, a lot of, you know, that's, you know, you end up on the logo of an entire league for as long as he did. That's definitely noteworthy and speaks to just the not only the talent that you had, but the sheer impact on the league and the game that you had. So thoughts and prayers, like I said, go out to the Jerry West family after this news. Just some sad news to start off the show with, but we were going to start with the NBA anyways, talking about game three. So, that is definitely not the news you expect. Again, Jerry West died at the age of 86. Let's get to game three. We've got that game happening tonight in Dallas, Boston up 2-0. And let me tell you something, if Dallas is going to get a game in this series, tonight should be the night for that. Not only are they at home, but here's the thing. Kristaps Porzingis, back to being banged up, questionable for tonight. Decision is going to be left up to the team doctors and Kristaps and see if he feels like he can play. A tendon issue in his left leg. It's a very rare injury. It's got like this weird name. I'm not going to try to go through the give you the medical name of what happened, but pretty much it's a strain or a tear of a tendon in his leg. So if he feels like he can play and the team doctors say that he should be okay to play without doing too much serious damage to that tendon that's already messed up, then he'll probably be in the lineup. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I think the good news, while this is probably concerning news for the Celtics, anytime a key player on your team goes down with an injury, the good thing, if there is a silver lining, a glass half full, if you will. See, there you go. But it's that Boston has been playing as a complete team and a complete unit, right? There's been other guys stepping up. It's Jason Tatum. It's Jaylen Brown. It's other guys throughout the locker room, whether they're coming off the bench or they're part of the starting five. You've had guys step up and play as a complete unit for the Boston Celtics. So I think even if Porzingis can't go down or can't play in tonight's game and he's down and out with this injury, I still think that Boston's going to be a formidable team for Dallas to beat. However, I think being in Dallas is going to help the Mavericks a lot. You're not going to have to go against that crowd at TD Garden who, let's be honest, have been absolutely rowdy the first two games of this series, especially after Kyrie kind of said, I thought it'd be louder. They wanted to remind him that that place can get pretty loud. TD Garden can get very loud there in Boston, and it has been a factor through the first two games of this NBA Finals. So being back at home for Dallas, you're not having to battle against the crowd. You're going to be able to set your offense. You're going to be able to communicate better because the crowd is going to be on your side. I think the big thing for Dallas, if they want to win this game, if they want to climb back into this series, you've got to be balanced. You've got to have other guys, much like what we talked about with Boston, where, yes, okay, this could be a concern with Porzingis going down with the injury, but with the way the rest of the team's been playing, you've got to feel comfortable in Boston, the fact that guys will step up around Porzingis if he's limited or if he can't play at all, and they'll pick up the slack. You can't say that for Dallas so far in the NBA Finals, right? Luka's dropped 30 in both first two games of this series. Kyrie combined, I think, probably has right around what Luka's total was in game two, which is right around 31, 32 points. Kyrie has got to step up. He's got to be that second player to Luka. It's got to be the Luka and Kyrie show tonight in Dallas. But then they also need other guys around them to step up and play better as well. I mean, you look at the stats of this series so far, especially from the three-point line. Kyrie is 0 for 8 from the three-point line in the NBA Finals. The entire team, 5 of 32, not counting Luka. 5 of 32, not counting Luka. That is unacceptable if you're Jason Kidd in the Dallas Mavericks. You have got to do better shooting the basketball, especially from longer range shots and beyond the arc. You've got to be able to have those shots hit tonight, and lucky for them, they're at home where those shots tend to fall a little bit easier, and you kind of can build a little bit of momentum, right? It's hard to build momentum on a road in the NBA Finals against a team like Boston in TD Garden with those fans bearing down on you. It's hard to build momentum. You can build some momentum at home. And I think Dallas is going to have a great opportunity tonight. Whether Porzingis plays or not, I think Dallas has a great opportunity at stealing a game tonight. The game gets tipped off 7:30 on ABC. You can also hear it right here on ESPN Pensacola 99.1. So definitely tune in for that. You know, watch it on ABC, mute the TV, and listen to, I believe, Sean Kelly is going to have the call once again as the play-by-play guy over on ESPN Radio right here. ESPN Radio right here on ESPN Pensacola. So tune in for that for sure. Definitely going to be an interesting one. If Dallas can win tonight, this is going to sound kind of like one of those ridiculous statements you'd hear Charles Barkley make. But if Dallas can win tonight, obviously, yes, they would avoid the sweep because they're getting a win. But I think that this is going to be that crucial turning point for them. If they can get that win, if they can bring this series to being 2-1 in favor of Boston heading into game four, I think they've got a lot better shot of getting to a 6- or 7-game series. If they drop tonight, I think we're still going to see a series that goes 4 or 5 games. I really do think that this game is the crucial swing game that Dallas must win, right? Game two was crucial just to kind of tie the series up and prevent being in this 0-2 hole. Well, now they're in the 0-2 hole. They have got to find a way to win this game, because if they drop to 0-3 in this series against the Celtics, I think it's safe to say that the Dallas Mavericks will have to look to next year to win an NBA title, because if they fall down 0-3, I just don't know if they have the firepower to get it done against this Boston team that's playing as well as they are, even with guys like Porzingis out of the lineup, playing as well as Boston is. If Dallas drops to 0-3, it's definitely going to be tough for them. So we'll see how that plays out. Again, game gets tipped off tonight, 7:30 on ABC. You can also hear it right here on ESPN Pensacola. Joey Chestnut, this was one of those stories. Had you come to me and said, hey, yeah, you're going to do a story featuring Joey Chestnut and the Nathan's Eating Hot Dog Contest on your show, I'd have been like, maybe on 4th of July we might talk about it. But in the middle of June? Nah, probably not. But Joey Chestnut has actually been banned from competing, either way you want to put that, I guess it works. He's been banned from the Nathan's Hot Dog Contest. Why? What gets you banned from a hot dog eating contest on Coney Island on 4th of July? Apparently signing an endorsement deal with an impossible plant-based hot dog company, because apparently that's a rival to Nathan's. Which, to be fair, as somebody who has consumed a fair share of hot dogs in his life, had Ballpark, had Oscar Mayer, had Nathan's, had all these other brands, is there really a competitor to Nathan's? Like they're kind of, that's like the top tier, right? Like that's a good hot dog, especially if you're going to come to it and say it's a plant-based impossible hot dog. How does that hold a candle to a Nathan's hot dog? I'm just saying, on that front, that's a completely different point off topic. But also on this, they're saying that, oh, well, you know, he had other demands that we at the MLE, which stands for Major League Eating. That's a real thing, by the way. Apparently the MLE bent over backwards to accommodate his other requests and demands. But this is where they drew the line. They were not going to allow him to compete in the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest on 4th of July in Coney Island while being sponsored and endorsing a plant-based impossible hot dog. First and foremost, to me, this is ridiculous, because how many players on Sundays in the NFL put on their jersey, which, by the way, is a Nike jersey. Every team in the NFL wears Nike jerseys. How many teams in the NFL put on their Nike jerseys, But they have a guy who signed to do an endorsement deal with Adidas. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, there's cross brand contaminant. How many guys have a deal where they're in commercials with Gatorade? But if their team is sponsored by Powerade, guess what they've got a drink out of? That little blue bottle with the black cap on top that says Powerade in white writing on it. That's what they've got to use when they come to the sideline. So why can we not, if we're the Major League Eating League or organization, whatever they want to refer to themselves as, and we're the committee that's in charge of the hot dog eating contest at Coney Island, why can we not look the other way with Joey Chestnut? And here's the thing, is that to my knowledge, Joey Chestnut was not like, yeah, I want to do a live commercial. Give me a microphone. I want to tell people about these vegan plant-based hot dogs before we eat these real hot dogs at this hot dog eating contest. That's not what he wanted to do. He just signed a deal on the side, a little side hustle to get some money. And they were like, no, you can't do that. That's against the rules. I get it. It's against the rules. They have rules you got to follow. But sometimes some rules are just stupid. And this is one of them. You're telling this man that because he signed an endorsement deal with this company, he can't compete in this contest? That's ridiculous. We're eating hot dogs on 4th of July. Why are we taking it that serious? Let the man compete. Let the man eat 50 hot dogs like he always does and win for what, the 50th year in a row or whatever, however many it's been. Also, in researching this, do you know how much Joey Chestnut makes just to show up to this contest? Not win it, just show up. The dude gets $200,000 just for being a part of it. And as recently, before all this started, signed a 4-year deal with the contest in Coney Island on 4th of July that's worth $1.2 million. Just for showing up eating some hot dogs. I think it's safe to say we all probably got in the wrong business there, right? Just let Joey Chestnut, let the man play. Let the man compete. Let him eat. All right? Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake. I'm saying let him eat hot dogs. Just, it's a hot dog eating contest. It's not that serious. Joe Burrow, moving on now to an actual sport with actual athletes. No offense to the competitive eaters out there. Joe Burrow is looking at his football mortality. After only 4 seasons in the NFL, he's kind of looking around going, how much longer do I actually have? And for him, that's a good question. That is a real good question, because I'm going to run through some of these injuries. And honestly and truthfully, until I saw this story and read this story about Joe Burrow thinking about this and read a couple of other stories about his injuries, trying to kind of prepare and look up to see what all he's gone through in the NFL his first 4 seasons, I was stunned by the amount of injuries that this guy has had in just 3 or 4 years. I mean, his rookie season got cut short because of a grade 3 tear in his ACL, a grade 3 tear in his MCL, grade 3 tear in the PCL, and a torn meniscus. I would not be walking if that happened to me. But what happened? He rehabbed, he recovered, he came back in 2021 where he suffered a dislocated pinky. Now you may go, well, that's a dislocated pinky. That probably happens a lot in football. Yes, but it's still an injury that's still going to cause some issues to your hand, and it's still kind of going to be potentially an injury that's severe enough that it could cause issues that linger and stay around for the long haul, right? Like, just because it's a dislocated pinky doesn't mean you pop it back in place and you're good. It can still cause some issues in there, and you know, you have some, you know, arthritic type pain or whatever because of that. So that's still, especially if that's on his throwing hand, that's definitely going to be something that is going to linger and cause issues. 2022, it looks like he had a knee strain and a grade 2 MCL strain in the Super Bowl. So this guy last year, season was cut short because of a tendon injury in his wrist that he had to have surgery for. This guy has had all kinds of injuries, whether it's his fingers, his wrists, his knees, both knees apparently. I mean, the rookie season, he pretty much destroyed the one knee with the grade 3 ACL, grade 3 MCL, grade 3 PCL tears, and the torn meniscus. And then 2 years later, he's got grade 2 MCL issue, and a knee strain. You got to start thinking about this. And I know a lot of people go, oh, well, he's young. He can bounce back. But yeah, when he's in his 40s and 50s, though, and he needs a wheelchair or a cane because he can't get around now, that's why Joe Burrow's, there's so many players now who are looking ahead to life after their sport, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball, whether it's the NFL, whatever it may be, they are looking ahead to life after their sport and the quality of the life that they will have when they're done playing that sport. So Joe Burrow's looking around. He's starting to feel it. He's starting to see the injuries stack up. And he's kind of starting to wonder, how much longer can I really be doing this if I can't stay healthy? So, you know, we talked about it before on the show with Mike Trout. Kind of the same thing. Mike Trout has had a problem with staying healthy the last few years. So how does Mike Trout, what does Mike Trout do to try to change that? Because if he can't change it, then this could be potentially a career-ending type thing. Well, it's the same for Joe Burrow. He's got to find a way to stay healthy. Whether that's changing the workout routine, whether it's changing out his training methods, his diet, whatever it is he needs to do to make the changes in his life to stay healthy, that's what he needs to do. Because this list of injuries is incredible. When you really break down and you look at the injuries that he has suffered, this is not like it's injuries going back to his time at LSU and the NFL, so it's almost a span of pretty much a decade. No, this is within the last 3 to 4 years that he's had these issues. So I don't blame Joe Burrow one bit for looking around going, how much longer do I really want to be doing this if I can't stay healthy? Because this sucks. Going through rehab, not being able to play. Now, I will say this. When he does manage to win 11 games, or excuse me, play in 11 games, Cincinnati is one of the best teams in the NFL. If Joe Burrow plays 11 games, Cincinnati is getting to the AFC Championship game. It's only happened twice. Only twice in his career has he been able to play 11 games in a regular season without being injured. I think it's a smart move for Joe Burrow to kind of start thinking about life after the game and what he could potentially do to kind of change some things to give him a few more years to play. Yeah, continue his career, absolutely. But also, you got to start having that conversation. You got to start thinking about, well, what if I can't get to that point to where I can't stay healthy, where I can't stop getting injured? You got to move on from the game. Because you don't want to end up in a wheelchair having to use, you know, a cane or a walker when you're 42 years old because your knees are so busted up that you can barely stand up and sit down without somebody helping you. So it's probably a tough conversation for him to have and a tough thing to think about, but definitely you got to put your own health ahead of the game. That is for sure. In college football, Oregon coach Dan Lanning was recently on The Herd. And if you are familiar with the show, you know my feelings with Colin Cowherd. I'm not the biggest fan of his, but I thought this was a great interview with Coach Lanning. It gave him the opportunity to kind of really talk about Bo Nix and what he expects Bo Nix to be able to bring to the table in the NFL there with the Denver Broncos. So it was kind of nice to see that side of him, but also hear him talk about the transition from going to the Pac-12 to the Big Ten. Because let's not forget, Oregon, UCLA, USC, a couple of other teams going to be in the Big Ten this year, not the Pac-12. And that is definitely a little bit of a change because of the way football is played in each respected league. Pac-12 was wide open, score a bunch of points. I'll score, you score, I score. And it was whoever made a mistake in the fourth quarter usually lost that football game, and the final score was always like 52-49 or something like that. Made for great entertainment on TV. I mean, don't get me wrong. Tuning into those Pac-12 games on like a Thursday night on ESPN, it's always great games. Lots of points on the board, back and forth. You're an offensive guy, you're an offensive fan, you loved it. But now these teams that are coming from that type of conference are going to a conference that is, we play really, really good defense, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and if we've got to beat you 17-9, we will beat you 17-9 as long as we come out with that win. Not saying there aren't teams inside the Big Ten that can score a lot of points. Ohio State can score a lot of points. Michigan can score a lot of points. Penn State has got a good offense. They'll be able to score points. But it is a very different league in the Big Ten compared to the Pac-12. And Dan Lanning was talking about that, and he said, you know, winning football is winning football. If you don't win in the trenches, if you're not winning the battle on the offensive line, you're not winning the battle on the defensive line, it doesn't matter what you do everywhere else, because you've got to win that battle first in order to win the game. And I applaud Dan Lanning on saying this, because he is absolutely correct. I've said it before on the show, and I will continue to say it. I was told by somebody who has coaching experience at a high level that when you're looking to build a team or you're looking to sustain a team, the three areas you look at the most, offensive line, defensive line, quarterback, right? Offensive line, you got to protect your quarterback. Defensive line, you got to find somebody to go after the other team's quarterback. And quarterback, obviously, he's the leader of the team. You got to have the right guy in place there. And I think Dan Lanning is absolutely correct when he says Oregon just has to win the line of scrimmage. Now, I will say, when you compare the size of Oregon's offensive line to a defensive line they'll be going up against in the Big Ten, there is a little bit of a noticeable upgrade in the size of the defensive linemen they will be having to block. So it is going to be a little bit tougher for them to win that line of scrimmage than it was in the Pac-12. But I am very curious to see how they go about doing that. And that's what he said. He said that, look, this time of year, his coaching staff is, they're really locked into their offices. They're in the film room. They're watching tape on all of these teams that they'll have to play this year, whether it is Ohio State, whether it is Penn State, Michigan, Michigan State, Northwestern, those teams that they have to play. They're really looking into them to see what kind of things they need to change heading into the offseason, heading into camp whenever that gets started, late July, beginning of August. What do they need to do to change and adjust as a team to get to a point to where they are going to be able to have success inside the Big Ten? I think Dan Lanning is doing everything correct. And I think that is why it's going to be an interesting thing to see how Oregon fits into the landscape of the Big Ten. Are they going to come in and are they going to compete for a championship right away? Or is it going to take them a season or two to kind of figure things out? I'm also very curious to see, like I said a while ago, the Big Ten has been, you know, you look at some of the teams inside the Big Ten, it's we want to play really good defense, keep the score low, and set us up for an opportunity to win off of a turnover, a special teams miscue, something like that. How does Oregon play against those teams when Oregon is used to going 90 miles per hour and putting 60, 70 points on the scoreboard? These are matchups I'm really interested to see. There's a lot of great games coming up on the landscape of college football this upcoming season in 2024. We've got a lot of great matchups. We're getting Texas A&M back this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. But seeing how these new teams adjust outside of Texas and Oklahoma, I think Texas and Oklahoma will be fine inside the SEC. But looking at a Colorado going to the Big 12, right? Looking at a USC, UCLA, and Oregon going to a Big 10. Seeing how these teams adjust to being a part of that new conference. Especially the Pac-12 teams going to the Big Ten. That is really what I'm excited to see and what I'm excited to watch. How these teams change and develop throughout the season, because that's what's going to have to happen with these guys. They're going to have to change. They're going to have to develop and redo some things as they go through the season as they see it live. Because, look, Dan Lanning said it. His coaches are watching film right now. Film is great, but it doesn't match being on the field live with it happening. So it's going to be interesting to see the adjustments made for these teams as they move through this new schedule, this new season, and this new conference, especially with lots of new in college football this year, right? Just a lot of new things happening in college football. I'm excited for it, and I think Oregon's got an outside shot at being one of those teams competing for the Big Ten. I think that they're going to be pretty fun to watch this year, even with having to deal with being in a new conference and adjust to that. Let's see. Lastly, before we go, quick little look at five teams in the NFL that's got to have success in 2024, right? I think we'll start off here. A couple of obvious ones. The New York Jets, really both teams in New York have to have success. But I want to in particular look at the New York Jets. The New York Jets, you've got Aaron Rodgers coming off a torn Achilles at the age of 40. Coming off of a torn Achilles is already hard enough. You make the guy 40 years old, that makes it even harder. So I think that it's definitely going to be interesting to see how Aaron Rodgers responds this season. I know there's been videos of him doing some good things in OTAs, but then there's also been videos where I've seen he's definitely struggled and made some bad decisions or not moving as well as he once did. Because let's not forget, Aaron Rodgers used to be a guy that had no problem taking off and would pick up the first down because he had some sneaky speed. He's not really moving as well as he used to now off of this torn Achilles at the age of 40. So we'll see how that plays out. Robert Saleh, the head coach for the Jets, I thought he was actually going to be able to come in and do some good things. He's 18-33 as the head coach. That's just not good enough. That's not going to cut it. If they don't win this year, I think Aaron Rodgers is probably done after this year. If they don't win, if it's a bad year, if Aaron Rodgers gets banged up, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to kind of take a look around and go, why would I want to do this another year? I'm done. I'm hanging it up. I'm going to be a broadcaster, or I'm going to live in some, you know, weird hut in the middle of nowhere, because that's apparently the stuff he's into now. But I think Aaron Rodgers is probably done after this season. And if they can't get any improvement as far as the team looking any better, I think they're going to be looking for a new head coach as well. So I think it is definitely going to be a must-win season for the Jets. You've got to be competitive. Look, in a division where you've got the Dolphins and the Bills ahead of you, it is going to be very tough to pass both of those teams and win the division. Because I think right now when you look at it, the Dolphins have to get past the Bills have to get past the Dolphins in the AFC East. That's the way it is. Whereas if you're the Patriots, you've got to get past the Jets, Dolphins, and Bills. And if you're the Jets, then you've got to get past the Dolphins and Bills. So I think the Jets just have way too much in front of them that is going to keep them from being able to compete for the AFC East. So have a decent quality season. Maybe find a way to get into a wild card spot. And if you can do that, you're going to set yourself up to maybe start turning the tables there for the New York Jets and looking at moving forward and getting better. And chipping away. That's why they've got to win this year, because it's that step in that right direction to give the team, to give the fan base the hope that, hey, you know what? Even though we're 18-33 in the last few years, we're moving in the right direction. We've got the right ideas happening between the GM and the head coach and all of those guys. It gives them a little faith. And when it comes to stuff like keeping your job in sports, faith, those grace periods, they definitely will help you out. It's very much a what have you done for me lately type business. So if what have you done for me lately, your answer to that is, well, we won 9 or 10 games, had a pretty decent season, either did get into a wild card spot or was just left out of a wild card spot. That's a pretty good answer to the question of what have you done for me lately, especially when previously your answer is 18-33. So, New York Jets definitely have to have a big season in 2024. The Dallas Cowboys, yeah, they've got to have a big season as well. They lost a lot of players through the offseason, and they haven't really done a good job of filling those gaps and filling those holes. So, lots of kind of question marks at a lot of key places, including multiple key spots on the offensive line. They went 12-5 a year ago, won the division, right? So, it's not like they had a bad season last year. 12-5, won the division, won the NFC East, won a playoff game before getting eliminated. So they, you know, there was some positive momentum last year. But again, it's the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, it's like when we talk college football, we talk about the Florida Gators or Florida State or Alabama or Georgia. The fan base and the expectation from the boosters or the you know front office or whatever it is, whether you're talking college football or the NFL, you have these programs like that to where the expectations from the fan base and those people that are connected to the organization or the team, they expect more. Especially if you go 12-5 and you win the division, why could you not find yourself into the NFC Championship game or even the Super Bowl? But once again, Dallas struggles in the postseason. There's a lot of pressure starting to build up on Mike McCarthy. You know, there was questions where Mike McCarthy would get fired last year after they got knocked out of the playoffs. Didn't get fired. Didn't get that contract extension like some other people thought he might get. So they're just kind of letting it go, letting it play out with Mike McCarthy. Wanting to see how 2024 goes for him. Also could be the last year you have Dak Prescott in a Dallas Cowboy jersey. He can opt out to be a free agent after this season, and a lot of people expect him to do that. So you've really got to strike while the iron is hot right now, or else, again, just like the Jets, where I said they're going to be looking for a new coach and a new quarterback next year, the Cowboys could be in that situation too. If this is not a good year for the Cowboys, if they go 6-11, something along those lines, 7-10, then, yeah, they're going to be in a situation to where it could very, very well be Mike McCarthy loses his job, Dak Prescott enters free agency, and now the Dallas Cowboys are having to start over at square one and completely rebuild with a new quarterback and a new coach. So you got to win this year to keep that from happening if you're the Dallas Cowboys. Next, we've got the San Francisco 49ers. Here's the thing. I know. So far, it's been two teams. It's been a team that struggled, a team that's had a good record but hasn't really done much. But the 49ers have gotten to the Super Bowl. The 49ers are a good football team. The 49ers are one of the best, if not the best, teams in the NFC. However, the reason they are on this list and the reason I think that they need to win in 2024 is because it is finally time to get that chip off your shoulder and go win a Super Bowl. It is no longer good enough now for the 49ers to make the NFC Championship game. It is no longer good enough now for the 49ers to just make it to a Super Bowl. They have to win the Super Bowl. That's why they're on this list. If any of these teams on this list are Super Bowl win or bust, it is the San Francisco 49ers. Because again, I think Dallas can I think they could save Mike McCarthy's job with a good season. Another 12-5 season, you'd be crazy to get rid of Mike McCarthy if you're Jerry Jones. But again, like I said, if they're 6-11, 7-10, oh, then he's out the door. Whereas with the 49ers, you expect them to be good. Now, they've got some issues. You know, they've got some guys that are possibly wanting out, maybe some issues with holdouts and contracts and things like that. But really, the big thing with the 49ers is you've won. You've gotten to the Super Bowl. Now you've just got to go win the Super Bowl. They can do that. They're going to silence all of those haters that are going to call them pretenders. Because right now, that's what when you look at the 49ers, that's what you see. You see pretenders. Oh, they can get to the game, but they can't take that next step and win it. They are Clemson of the NFL. You remember a few years ago, Clemson could get there, but they couldn't ever really seem to win it. And then finally it happened. They beat Alabama and Tampa for the national championship, and they went on to win one or two more. That's the 49ers right now. They've got to win the Super Bowl. You've gotten into the playoffs. You've won your division. You've won the NFC. You've got to the Super Bowl. Now go win the Super Bowl. Cleveland Browns, they're also on this list because, I mean, here's the thing with Cleveland. They've added Jerry Jeudy to go with Amari Cooper, who more than likely Amari Cooper probably going to be out in free agency in 2025. Deshaun Watson not going anywhere at the quarterback position, so as long as he plays up to par there, you've got a solid quarterback. And the roster itself is not bad. If you look at the roster for the Cleveland Browns, it is not a bad roster. If ever there was a year for them to get it going and get it taken care of and to make some noise inside the NFL, it's got to be this year. Because if you look at that roster that is solid, there is a lot that probably is going to be leaving in free agency in 2025. Amari Cooper being one of them, like I just mentioned. So you've got to strike while the iron is hot, and the iron can't get any hotter for Cleveland now than it is. They've got to take advantage of this year. Use the cap space they'll have access to help keep whoever they can. But understand that going into 2025, they are definitely going to be losing some players. So you've got to get it done this year if you're Cleveland. And finally on this list, the team that we've kind of sort of already talked about before with Joe Burrow, the Cincinnati Bengals. Yeah, you got it. They're kind of right there with the 49ers, right? You've got to finish that process. You've shown us you're good enough to win the AFC. You've shown us you're good enough to get to the national championship game. Or excuse me, not the national championship, the Super Bowl. You've showed us that you're good enough to get to the Super Bowl. I go win it, right? In order to do that, you got to keep Joe Burrow healthy. I know they've got contract issues going on right now with T. Higgins. That could potentially be a distraction. Ja'Marr Chase still has 2 years left on his rookie contract. Neither one of those receivers at OTAs right now for the Bengals. So it is definitely one of those things to where they're facing some distractions. But if they can kind of get those distractions taken care of by the time the season starts, if you can work out a deal with T. Higgins before the season starts, then you know you'll have T. Higgins locked in. You know you're going to have Ja'Marr Chase locked in for another 2 years because that's what he has left on his rookie contract, and he can't opt out. So you can have those guys sticking around, keep Joe Burrow healthy. And again, just like I said, it's one of those teams that's like San Francisco. They've had the success. They've gotten to the mountaintop. They just have not been able to hoist that trophy, that Vince Lombardi trophy. And I think, again, Cincinnati is kind of in that same category as the 49ers. A little bit more of a you've got to win this year, because I think last year when Joe Burrow goes down, 49ers struggled throughout the rest of the season. You've got to avoid that, right? Avoid that. Keep Joe Burrow healthy. Get back to the AFC Championship game. Get back to a Super Bowl. And actually get it done and win it this time, right? I think if we end up having a Bengals 49ers Super Bowl, one of those teams, one of those fan bases is getting baptized and cleansed because they will finally take that Vince Lombardi trophy home with them. And then the other one will still be standing there trying to figure out what they need to do, what they need to add, or what they need to change to not only get back to that point, but to finally actually win it. So that is the five teams I see in the NFL that need to win this year. Kind of different ways of winning, different styles of winning throughout there. But still, a little bit of another headline before we go here. Christian McCaffrey going to be on the next edition of Madden. I wish you the best, Christian McCaffrey. And I hope nothing happens to you. And I don't mean that in like a menacing way, but if you're a fan of that video game and you're a fan of sports, you know that there is a very real correlation to a quote-unquote Madden curse with whoever is on the cover having a season-ending injury the season that they are on the cover. So we'll see what happens. Maybe he can shake it. I don't know. We'll find out. But that is some exciting news there. Christian McCaffrey going to be on the cover of Madden. We're also getting NCAA football back in, what, just a little over a month, like a month and 5 days, something like that. It's a great time to be a sports fan. Definitely looking forward to all the things coming up throughout the summer, whether it's football news, baseball, whatever it is. And, of course, we'll have a recap coming up tomorrow of Game 3 of the NBA Finals. We'll also look ahead to Game 3 of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. That'll be happening tomorrow night in Edmonton. So we'll look into that as well right here on The Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, and ESPN Pensacola Podcast. Hey, you have a great day. I'll talk to you tomorrow.